Time to talk money matters with Shane Oliver, the chief economist with AMP. Good morning to you, Shane. How are you?
Good morning, Luke. I'm good. Hope you are too.
Yeah, I'm really, really good. A couple of interesting stories out at the moment concerning work-life balance. I have spoken about this morning, but I'm really keen to hear your thoughts. The Australian Council of Trade Unions, the ACTU, has pitched a scheme, and the scheme would introduce the right for greater annual leave flexibility into industry awards. In other words, workers could be given the right to double their annual leave, but at half pay under this new proposal. And while the Australian Chamber of Commerce and Industry, the ACCI, and the Australian Industry Group support the plan, there are some negatives associated with this. I guess if worse comes to worse, and if you can afford to take 4 weeks you get 4 weeks annual pay. If you're going to be given another 4 weeks, those extra 4 weeks at half pay, I don't know how many people could afford to do that, but you do run the risk of the boss suddenly saying, gee whiz, I don't need Shane much anymore. Gee, we didn't miss him during his extra 4 weeks. What are your thoughts on all of this? Is it a good idea? Does it bring about work balance? I mean, you know, school holidays, the number of school holidays far outweighs the number of days you have on annual leave, doesn't it?
It does. And look, I think there's a lot of this stuff sort of floating around post the pandemic. You know, some companies talking about going to a 4-day week. So everyone tries to jam the 5 days worth of work into the 4 days. So there's some merit in some of these things, and maybe they help promote work-life balance, but there's always a danger that it goes too far. It could involve an extra cost to the company, much like a 4-day week. If you're still paying for 5 days and everyone's just working 4 days, but you don't get more work out of them on those 4 days, then it is an extra cost to the company. Same here, that the company would be paying for effectively 6 weeks worth of leave, people away for 8 weeks potentially in the year, so an extra cost to the company, potentially less work done. So I reckon a lot of small businesses, particularly tradies running building businesses or whatever, they would find this a bit of a rich one. And then there's that point you just mentioned there that company couldn't officially do this, but the company might say, or the boss might say, well, you know, if Luke's away all that time, I've got other workers who aren't taking up all their leave. They want to be in here doing the extra hours. I'll favour them and let Luke go.
Yeah.
Shane put it that way. So that would worry me a little bit here. And that's always the risk in all this. When you've got a very tight labour market, hard to get workers, these things might work. But if you go into an environment where unemployment's a little bit higher and there's lots of workers out there clamouring for jobs, I reckon these sorts of scams could backfire. And certain workers would find it a lot tougher, particularly those who are less keen to put the hours in.
Yeah. Shane Oliver is with us. We're talking money matters. Interesting story in the Australian Financial Review yesterday about Gen Z workers and their interpretation of a work-life balance.
That's right. I found this one interesting. I'm always sceptical of articles which try and lump a generation all in together. I mean, it always seems like baby boomers and Gen X are complaining about Gen Z. Seems a bit too easy to me. But by the same token, you know, this was an interesting story. It's sort of along the lines that there's so much focus these days on work-life balance. A lot of Gen Z might have started their career off through the pandemic where you could work at home and less time in the office, and therefore maybe they take that to the extreme when they go into the office and think that, well, you've got to get out of here by 5 o'clock. And of course the Fin Review is saying, well, the article basically saying, well, that might hurt their careers. So there is a bit of an issue here. I reckon some Gen Z people would say, well, I don't work like that. I'm gonna put in the hours. You know, I'm gonna be pretty keen. I'll be in there and I'll do my 7 to 7 or whatever it is to get my career going. So you've got to be a little bit skeptical about some of these articles. But I think, again, some of this stuff works when you've got a very tight labour market. You know, people are desperate to get grads and so on. Yeah, you can have a slightly easier time, but it may get tougher in an environment where there's higher unemployment. The other thing is that I think at the end of the day, and you and I would both recognise this when we started our careers, you want to show that you're keen. if you're always just angling out there to get a holiday or knock off, when others are still doing lots of work, then it may not look so good. That said, I'm all for work-life balance, but you've got to just get the balance right and make sure it doesn't harm your career.
We've got to come up with a scheme that can encourage young Australians to get apprenticeships, to build our skills base, because we're running out of training.
We certainly do. You know, you just look at the housing numbers. They're horrible. We just need more tradies out there, and that's the reality. Perhaps too many people have been encouraged to go to university. Let's try and work on ways to get more doing trades, because that's where the big shortages are.
Yeah, there needs to be an incentive there, maybe a monetary incentive. I don't know. Where does that come from? The taxpayer? Will it be government subsidised? Because their employers will say, hang on, I can't afford to pay more to an apprentice. They're there to learn. That's the way it's always worked. Or, anyway, look, it's a story for another day. Shane, the market's a bit ordinary yesterday. Is everyone still looking at the United States wondering, God, is Powell going to introduce some rate cuts or not?
That's right, Luke. That's the big worry here. Earlier this year, there was a hope that America would cut rates 7 times. So assuming each move is a 0.25% reduction, 7 times starting in March. And of course, that keeps getting pushed out. Now the market's thinking maybe only 2 cuts or less, maybe starting in September. And the head of the central bank in the US called the Fed, a guy called Jerome Powell, he came out and said, well, he's still not confident yet on inflation. They're going to leave it a little bit longer. So that's obviously pushed out the rate cuts in the US. And that's still weighing on markets a little bit, weight on the US share market, then weight on our market. And so yesterday, we fell 7 points, not a lot in it, only 0.1% of the market. Half the market was down, half was up. Interestingly, BHP had a bit of a fall, but odd news was that the iron ore price actually went up yesterday, which is probably good news. But I think it's a reflection of the nature of the market. We've had these strong gains, went to record highs. For share markets, it's often the case of, you know, 2 or 3 steps forward and 1 step back. And unfortunately, we're going through one of those 1 steps back.
Yeah. Okay. What's the Australian dollar doing today?
Well, it's also had a bit of a step back, only just above 64 US cents. And that again was partly on the back of what was coming out of the US. You know, maybe the Fed keeping rates higher for longer attracts money into the US at the expense of Australia. And of course, that saw the Aussie dollar go down a bit. I saw yesterday there's an interesting graph that the IMF is like a World Bank.
Yeah, the International Monetary Fund.
International Monetary Fund. And they had a graph showing how much each households in Australia, the US, Europe and so on, devote to servicing their debt,
yeah,
their debts, total debts, credit cards, but particularly mortgages. In Australia, we almost spent 20 cents in the dollar servicing our debts.
Yeah.
In the US, it's only 7 cents in the dollar.
Wow.
So if you're wondering why the US economy is a lot stronger than ours at present and why I reckon they may take longer to cut rates than the RBA should, it's partly because there's a lot more pressure on households in Australia, particularly those with a mortgage, than in the US.
You can't really compare the Australian mortgage scene to the Americans, because the Americans, a majority of those mortgages have been fixed from the start and will die fixed, whereas Australians do go variable.
That's right. On average in Australia, you've now got about something like 80% of households in Australia now have variable rates. They've seen their mortgage rates go up, even though on fixed rates, those on fixed rates aren't forever. You won't die with it. It'll only be for 2 or 3 years. So the average Australian with a mortgage has seen their interest rate go up by something like 3.5% from the bottom 2 years ago. In the US, it's gone up by something like 0.5%. So American households with those 30-year mortgages are sitting pretty, and that explains partly why they're debt servicing costs, the cost of servicing their mortgages, takes up such a smaller portion of their income.
That's exactly what I was saying. You can't really compare the two, can you? Hey, Shane, Oliver, good to talk to you. Thank you again for another lesson, and we'll talk again tomorrow. Yep.
Sounds good, Luke. Look forward to it.